Your cats are Leos like you.
They're not, actually.
Damn.
Nice try. I don't want to get so technical about it, but they're actually Libras. Libras are pretty dramatic also, though. Anyway.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Elizabeth Ruska.
Bean, today we have a special guest to talk to us about spiritual accountability. Are you ready? Bean, what's up?
What's up? Still working on getting this hair, this short hair in order.
Oh my God. We're still talking about the hair.
It's hard to fashion.
You know what? It's hard with headphones.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah. That's the problem right now is that you're having a headphone issue, but it looks, again, gorgeous. We will never use the word cute. How's your week? Wait, actually, let's not leave our guest waiting. We have a special guest this week.
Yes, Bean. We do. I love guest weeks.
So let's go ahead and introduce her. But before I do, let you have access to our incredible guest. Did you just say you're bored with me?
That's a joke that you caught on too late.
Yeah, I did. Before we introduce our guest, we just want to ask you all a big favor. Listen, if you are listening and enjoying this show in any way,
which we know you are,
obviously, you keep coming back. If it's helping you in any way to learn more about yourself or feel like you're on a growth journey that's exciting to you, we are asking you right now to think of one person that you love enough that you want also to benefit from this show and share this podcast with one person today. That would be super supportive to us. And also, we think, a nice little gift to your friend or loved one, right, Bean?
Agreed. Of course.
I'm always the one asking, begging for listeners. You're just the angel over there.
No, I'm not. And I always tell people to go to YouTube. I don't even know why, but I'm always like, check out our YouTube. I think it's because I upload the video. So I feel like in command of it. And I want the attention over there. And I want people's opinion on my short blonde hair.
Please go look at her hair and give us some.
For crying out loud.
Anyway, all right. So we've left her waiting too long.
Sorry.
We have the incredible Susanna Friedman joining us. She is a spiritual teacher and counselor, and she is here to talk to us about spiritual accountability. Susanna, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. I've been talking to you for a while about coming on, and we finally made it work. So
we sure did.
Just buckle up.
8 unanswered emails later. And I mean me unanswering them, me not answering them.
I was like, Maury, are you sure she wants to attend the show?
I think I finally texted you, please respond to Melissa or she's going to kill me and you both.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like so one of the things Maury and I have, maybe Maury wants to tell her favorite story about me saying I would do something and then just leaving.
Yes.
No, so we have really bonded over our like ADHD stuff, which for me is like a newly realized thing. And I think I'm reveling in it a little too much because
Same.
Now I feel like a lot less pressure to try to like fit into this way of being that doesn't work for me. But what that means is that some emails where I know the person's not going to get mad at me just get like pushed to the side.
You're right.
That, you know, that is what happened here.
I never even said it to you aggressively. I just was like, maybe we should just plan unless in case she doesn't show. That was all. I wasn't even like,
that's
how
exactly
dare
what
she?
You said.
Yeah.
Let's have a backup plan for what we're going to record. I was like, Susanna would never not show, but she's not going to respond to you.
That's exactly
that's
true.
For sure.
I never will not show. I just, you may never hear from me ever again.
Okay, Susanna, we have a million questions for you, but before we get into them, we like to do a little catch up called Cringe or Delight, just so that we can hear about each other's week. Bean, what do you got?
I have one, but you said I haven't shared it, but I feel like I shared it, but maybe I didn't share it, about a hose.
Okay.
If this sounds familiar to anyone,
my
apologies.
I feel like I would remember a story about a hose because that is just so titillating.
I was walking down the street, taking a walk in my neighborhood when I noticed a gigantic pile of horse shit. And I thought, that's weird.
Oh.
Why would there be horse poop in the middle of my neighborhood? And then I'm walking and as I'm staring at the horse poop, I step in dog poop, not paying attention because normally I'm looking. Also, big not shout out to the people who do not clean up after their dogs. It drives me insane.
Totally.
Anyway, I go home, I turn on the hose, I spray down my shoe that has particles all stuck in it. And then I'm going about my business. And about 7 hours later, I'm out with my kids in the front yard. My hose is in the backyard. And I'm noticing the mystery is kind of gone when I tell the story in this way. But I'm noticing there's like water pooling out of my front grass, like onto the ground, and it's moving. And I see it's moving down into the street. It's moving towards the sewer. And me and my kids are like staring at it, like, what is going on? Did a neighbor like empty their pool? It's a constant stream of water. I cannot figure it out. And then like, I mean, this is going on. Like we've become full detectives, like magnifying glasses, like touching things, places. Somehow me and one of my kids walk up and notice the flower bed is completely filled with water. And in that moment I go, oh my God, I never turned the hose off. So my hose, Mother Earth is not pleased with me, had been running for 7 hours to the point that my whole backyard had filled up with water, and it came all the way down through my front yard and was now running a pool down. This spiritual accountability coach over there is giving me like Mother Earth dagger eyes. I did not do it intentionally. This is why it's my cringe. I left my hose on for 6 hours. And it was just pouring water out. What?
Maybe you have ADHD.
Maybe. I think I wasn't like, it was like just getting to the hose season. You know, you don't use your, well, in these parts, we don't use our hoses all the time. Right? So I was just getting back into the hosing. I wasn't familiar.
Yeah, the hose.
I wasn't thinking about the on and the off. There's so many pieces of the hose puzzle.
So it's a lot. Also, I have so many questions about this story.
Oh.
The biggest one being is that there seems to be a lot of different kinds of shit in your neighborhood.
I don't really understand how that was related.
Why was there because she had to wash the dog shit off of her shoe, which is why,
while being distracted by the horse shit.
Yeah.
And then I could only get so much of the dog shit out of the shoe, so I had to turn on the hose.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nope, but lots of shit.
Lots of
horse
shit
in your neighborhood? Is there just horses?
There are horses like in this area. People do a lot of horse riding here because it's beautiful, but like not through residential neighborhoods. But there was no other explanation for what poop this was. Like, I've seen a lot of horse shit in my day, and that was a pile of horse shit.
Wow. Well, Bean, I think that it's really amazing that you guys spent hours trying to figure out where this water was coming from.
We were so curious. Yeah, we were so curious. And then I was to blame. That's kind of the joke's on me. You know what I mean?
Wow. Well, listen, while we're focused on you, actually, my delight has to do with you.
Oh, me?
Are you? I know. Oh. Delight. Surprise and delight. Man. All right. So part of my delight from this week is that I have started this group session, which Susanna knows about. That I'm, you know, always trying to think of ways for how I can keep coaching people when there's one of me and lots of humans.
Yes.
And so one way that I'm doing it now is to do group sessions and have like up to 10 people in a group. We meet once a month and we talk about, you know, intuitive wisdom and healing our limiting belief systems. And I teach and I coach or whatever. Anyway, we had our first session. It was so wonderful. It went really well. Everyone vibed.
Oh, I love
it.
A
great kickoff. And one of the women that is in the group, I'm also mentoring. This person lives in London and we've met. And so they want to go off on a coaching journey themselves. And so I've like so happy to mentor her. But we were talking in our mentoring session after this group session. And she said she's coming to this retreat that you're coming to, Bean, in September.
Oh, goody goodness.
And I said, oh, really calmly, I was like, oh, cool. Guess who you'll also meet there? Because I know she listens to the podcast. Melissa, when I tell you, full starstruck excitement. Like, full, oh my God, not Melissa.
The one who left the hose on? Me?
The one who left, just silly Melissa leaving the hose on. Bean is going to be there. She goes, she claps her hands and she goes, oh my God, I love Melissa.
Oh, I'm like, so honored.
I know.
My cheer. Yeah.
So that's you've so got nice. Fans just growing all around the world.
Bean. Wait, how did she find out about the retreat? How are we all in on this secret retreat?
It's a secret retreat that she also, she knows the person who's organizing the retreat.
I think you might know her. Well. Yeah.
Is it a secret retreat? Yeah. Is it a secret?
But there's not a lot of, it's not like of all the people in all the world. There's only like how many people going? 11?
Well, the thing about Jennifer is that, like, she's got tons. This is a Jennifer Fried retreat for those of you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So the thing, who she happens to be my stepmother, which is why I have the inside track on these things.
Thank you for connecting all the dots. People are listening being like, what are they talking about?
Yeah. And Susanna so was Jennifer like, leads these retreats multiple times a year. And the one she does every year, one of them is in Ojai, California.
Yeah.
And she has her retreats. I think she always lets them out to like her clubs first and the people she knows, and then they just fill. So she has no reason to like announce it more publicly. Because like the number of spaces she has is commensurate basically with like the people who are going to sign up immediately anyways. So
yeah,
that's why they're not like all over her social media or whatever. Yeah. They just fill up immediately. Yes.
Right. Yes. And Bean is coming to her first one. So and grateful. You have a fan waiting for you.
That's exciting.
All right, Susanna, we've given you enough time to prepare. Yeah. And now you're aware that it doesn't have to be anything that interesting.
I don't know that host story. I know, but
yeah.
I mean, it was tantalizing. Like,
yeah, I know.
Riveting. You
know,
it was entertaining. Filled with
it had all the qualities of a good story.
Even if the even if the content was a hose, you know, it's still what a good exercise in like making a hose very interesting.
Thank you.
Yes.
I had one. I was trying to think of something cringy because that happens a lot, but then I like was very gratified to realize that not much cringy stuff has happened this week. And that could be because my partner and his son are in Arizona. So I don't have anybody to embarrass myself in front of. You know what I mean?
That is
like,
so
I'm not being called out. I'm a stepmom to two teenagers. And so I'm not being called out right now on like the weird shit I'm doing.
Oh,
yeah.
Blessings.
Don't you feel extra cringy with teenagers around?
Oh my God. They're always like, because then I'll say something they said last week. You know, they call me Zuzu and they're like, Zuzu, what are you talking about? I'm like, what do you mean? What am I talking about? You just said this last week. And they're like, ugh.
I was like, you're so out of touch.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I think we all think we're cool. And
100%.
Then they are the quickest to put us in our place.
Yeah. But isn't that so?
Well, you're cool with that haircut. Yeah. That's for sure.
That's not what the kids think.
It is funny. Like, everyone at their own age thinks that they're like the barometer of cool. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, no, we really are. You guys should be looking at us about what's cool.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And they're like,
true.
Why can I see your ankles? Why aren't you wearing socks that are higher?
Or did you take a picture of your feet? Or like, are your feet in the picture?
Yeah.
That's a one that's not allowed.
Wait, so you can't have feet in the picture?
We'll explain it to you later, Bean. Yeah, you can't.
I haven't done high socks yet either, but I really want to get there.
No, me neither. I might get there this summer. I'm not sure.
Me too. I'll follow you.
Also, I just wanted to say. I could go off on so many tangents because I was going to be like,
I know.
Hose season. Like, I grew up in California. I've lived in California my whole life. I'm like, you mean all year season?
That's why I said in these parts, in these them parts. Yeah. Right. The north.
Although we have times where we're not allowed to use our hoses because we are in a drought, people.
Right.
I don't think we're in a drought right now, are we?
No, I know, but there's times.
No, for sure.
Wildfire season.
I grew up in a drought and it was like we had strict rules.
You know what, guys? Wait, I have to say that this conversation is cluing me in as to why they think we're not cool.
Huh. Oh,
right.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the look of realization on all of our faces.
Yeah.
I was like,
We did just realize that we aren't cool.
You said we're
let's
drown.
Let Susanna.
Yeah. Go.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell us her delight.
Jesus Christ.
My delight. Yeah. So I did have a really sweet delight. So this retreat that we were both on where we met, Maury and I in Bali, it was like full of really incredible people. And I gave a lot of astrology readings on that retreat because Jennifer didn't want to, which is fine. I'm happy to. And I wanted to. And part of the work that I do is intuitive healing stuff as well. And I just kind of mix it all together, including coaching. It's just sort of like a, you know, hodgepodge of
smorgasbord.
But I had a session with this one woman and she like sent me this really kind, amazing testimonial video. And she was like, please use this. Like, please put it on your social media, put it on your website.
I love that.
And it was just like, I don't know, so heartfelt. And I really respect her and admire her and admire the work that she's doing in the world. And so it was just really sweet to get that. And to be able to put that out there. I'm really horrible at self-promotion. And so you know, it was nice having someone else say some things that I could just like
aww,
put up
so
on.
You deserve it. Thank you. Wait, I have a guess on who it is. When we stop recording, I'm going to ask you.
I mean, it might be down now. I'm sure you know who it was.
That's so neat.
That's really sweet. You deserve that.
Better than a hose.
Way better than a hose. That actually is a really great transition. So, Susanna, we wanted to have you on. We always like to say why we want to do the topic of the episode we're doing. And so as Bean and I were talking about, you know, how we can keep focusing on some of the topics we talk about around mindfulness and focus on self and, you know, evolving your consciousness, I was talking about you and I said, you know, my friend Susanna is a spiritual accountability coach and she has a lot of really fascinating things to say about spirituality and our role in embracing it in a way that is the most productive and effective in our lives. So we asked you to come on. You have such an interesting and deep background that allows you to really go deep on stuff. I've really rarely met people who can take a concept and give you the history of it, explain the spiritual concepts of it, and then bring it back to a pragmatic place. So that's what we're hoping you're going to do. You've been a yoga teacher for 15 years. You have your master's in philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness. You're a trained astrologer. So like there is so much we can talk to you about. And we're just really happy to have you here. And we want to start with, actually, no, Bean, I'm going to give you the first question.
I just wanted to know, I mean, when you set it up top.
Your mouth is open.
Which is like a constant always. With guests. I'm always amazed that people are talking to. I love it. When Maury asked you how you wanted to be referred to up top, you already listed off those incredible things. And now I need more. I need more, more, more. I want to hear your background, your training. I want it all.
Yeah. It's always an interesting question because it's like, where do I start? And the truth is, like, I was born on a Wednesday.
Wow. The year was.
Yeah, 1984, actually. Yeah. No, but the truth is that I was really born into a spiritual household. Like, my dad had both my parents were major hippies, and my dad had followed Swami Muktananda, who is this teacher out of India who had come to the States and gained quite a following. And then he introduced my mom to these concepts. I don't know if it was like a complete introduction, but she started going to these meetings as well. And so then, you know, they started the Waldorf school in Santa Barbara when I was like very young, so that my sister had somewhere to go. So they've always just been sort of like drawn to spirituality that isn't as affiliated with a religion. My mom's Episcopalian, my dad's Jewish. So we did grow up like with those holidays as well. And then my godparents, who the mother was my mom's best friend and her kids are like exactly the same age as me and my brother and my sister. And my godbrother's 10 days older than I am. And we're like sort of spiritual twins. And but they would go to India often. And they met this man named Pandaji while they were there. And he came back to the States and he was sort of known in India, but not at all known in the States. He now is the most well-known guru, like modern day guru in India. His name is Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. That's his like name in his role or Gurudev. But he would just come and do satsang, which is like gathering together to hear teachings. And so I started going to that when I was really, really young. Went to Hindu Sunday school when I was really little. So all of this stuff was like really, you know, I didn't have to search any of this stuff out. It was all just given to me. And then as we got older, I mean, you know, like things just change and we sort of fell away from that. But I went to my middle school. I went to Santa Barbara Middle School, for those of you who know Santa Barbara. And they had a really strong tie with a sister school in Tibet. And so we would learn a lot about different Tibetan traditions and Tibetan Buddhism and all this stuff. So I was just really lucky that it was like part of my education growing up.
Your childhood is cooler than my entire life.
Totally. Yeah. No, my childhood was definitely like amazing. I don't try to pretend like that's not the case at all. I mean, it's
correct.
Like magical. Yeah. The facts are the facts. Magical, incredible existence. So then I sort of like put all of that off to the side and did the whole like teenager, like, I don't believe in God. Blah, blah, blah. But even though like I very much did, I just didn't want to admit it. And then when I was in a yoga class when I was 19, and it's sort of weird, but like I was actually talking about this in Yoga Sunday School on Sunday. I looked up at the ceiling. I was in a Bikram yoga class of all types of yoga. And I looked up at the ceiling, which you lay down between these postures and your eyes are supposed to be open. And I just had this moment of like such overwhelm of like, oh yeah, hi, how are you? How have you been? Like just this reconnection with what I call God, which is not denominational. Other people call it spirit or source or the divine or whatever. I love the name God. And so since then it was like steadily just gaining more information. When I was 25, I did my yoga teacher training and I had been fully on like being an actor path. Like I had lived in LA, had an agent, lived in Australia, worked with a theater company there. And then the first day of my yoga teacher training, I was like, oh, I guess I'm done with all of that. Like it was just like done. So yeah, then I started teaching and the spiritual and philosophical piece of it has always just been like so profoundly transformative for me, but also recognizable. Like it, mm-hmm. it doesn't at all feel like I'm necessarily learning something new. It feels like I'm getting reacquainted with things just at much deeper levels. And then, you know, through my graduate program and consciousness studies, really learning about how all these traditions from the East have really affected Western psychology, especially, and in studying these ancient texts, like how much of what we consider to be like mental health now and steps that we take to promote mental health, how much of that is actually just written in these thousands of years old texts, you know?
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And like neuroscience keeps like proving these thousand year old texts true. You know, they're like, turns out you have grooves in the brain when you think. And every yogi who studied this stuff is like, really? No way.
No doubt.
And you can change them. That's crazy. So the idea of neuroplasticity is not new to the yogis, you know, and has been written about for thousands of years. So all these things, it was just like, okay, this is what feels like the most resonant to me. It's what feels the most authentic to me. And then between then and now, I've just sort of been like, I wouldn't say collecting, but doing deep dives into different modalities to see what else fits. And the intuitive work is part of that. The intuitive healing work is part of that. And then astrology, you know, I've been brought up with astrology as well. So that's just a framework that I use to help understand people pretty quickly. I don't know what astrologers you've had on the show, if any, but you know, like
Jennifer has been
Freed.
Well, so you've had the best. But you know, astrology, like she's heard it many times. I've heard it so many times where people are like, you just said something that it took me 4 years to get to in therapy.
Yes.
And I'm like, just by looking at a chart, you know, and yeah. And I'm like, therapy's amazing. I love therapy. I also think that sometimes it's like, why take 4 years to get to that?
Right.
You know what I mean? So astrology is just very helpful for me to see like exactly what's going on, what this person is working with, so that when I'm speaking to them or offering them guidance or whatever, it's from like what they can understand, from what they can handle, not from some sort of like ideal of this is how you should do things, because that just doesn't work. You know, none of us can stick with that. So that was long-winded, but that's sort of my background.
No, I love that. Were there any modalities you tried that you were like, this isn't for me?
I mean, there are some that I just know, like everybody's like, oh, are you going to do Vedic astrology, which is Indian astrology? I'm like, no, I've learned some of it, but it just doesn't resonate with me in the same way.
Right.
People, because I'm a yoga teacher, people always wonder if I'm going to do some sort of like Thai massage or something. I'm like, fuck no. Like,
all right.
Just because I teach yoga doesn't mean that I like want to wear flowy pants all the time. And, you know,
I want you like, to though.
Shop at Chico's.
Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with Chico's? Yeah. Why are you guys being so judgy?
Listen, Chico's is very Dorothy from Golden Girls core. And as anyone who knows me knows that she's my icon in life. So in no way is that a dig. It's a compliment.
Maybe Chico's will sponsor you.
Oh, yeah,
that
maybe
would be a delightful.
This episode is sponsored by Chico's.
Hilarious.
All right. So let's get to the core of where our listeners can really draw inspiration and clarity for themselves. What do you mean when you say spiritual accountability? Can you define that for us as we enter this conversation?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this because I haven't come up with one like succinct soundbite of what I mean by spiritual accountability, which I probably should just for like sales.
Now's your time. Do it right here, please. Yeah.
We can workshop this.
We can workshop this. Yeah. No, but for me, spiritual accountability is every day doing something. I don't care how big it is, how small it is, but every day doing something that reminds you either of the highest, so spirit, God, or of your highest. So like spiritual integrity to me, you know, at its core definitely has to do with each of our connection to God, and that each of us is, if God is the sun, each of us is a ray of the sun. If God is the ocean, each of us is a wave. We come out of it, we go back into it. Each wave is different. Each wave has its own characteristics. Each wave lasts certain lengths of time. It may do damage. It may be beautiful. It may whatever, but it all comes from the same place and goes back into the same place. So doing something to remind yourself of that every day, that like you're not your ego, you're not your job, you're not what you accomplish, your worth is not tied up in, and your value is not tied up in anything quantifiable. Like that is not true. You know, and there's nothing you can do. Nothing is outside of the scope of love. Nothing is outside of the scope of God. And therefore, you can never be outside of that, you know. So something to remind yourself of that every day. If spirituality doesn't speak to you, still, I would tell clients, like, I just wouldn't talk about God. And I would just say, what can you do every day to bring out your highest? What is the highest version of you? What does that look like? Because for most people, it still has a lot of overlap with spiritual principles. For most people, the highest version of themselves is someone who's very generous, is someone who's patient, is someone who's kind, is some all of these who doesn't cause harm. You know, for most people, their highest version of themselves has a lot to do with what I would break down in terms of like what spirit as humans, how we can get closest to spirit, you know? So, again, that's a very long-winded way of saying that I think spiritual integrity and accountability is like really about daily practice to lift yourself up.
Oh, I really love that. What does it matter? Why, how does it benefit us to keep ourselves accountable? Like, what if we just were spiritual, but we weren't holding ourselves to a certain standard?
Yeah. So I would call that phony spirituality.
Oh, ouch.
And I would call that spiritual bypass.
Shots fired, Bean.
Not to say that your love of spirit or energy or whatever you do isn't real. Like, it's all real. But accountability, in the word accountability, like discipline is sort of inherently a part of that word, you know? And all these old teachings, these sacred texts talk about discipline being the way to freedom. You know, if you don't have any rail guards on anything, you never really know what the right path is. You don't know what to do. So spiritual accountability and being disciplined in that way definitely, in one way, it can feel like it limits your possibilities, but in another way, it just clarifies the answers. It's like there's a lot less confusion, you know? And I think that you can talk about this in the way of intuition as well. Like if you listen to your intuition, which I would say the yogis, like the text would say intuition is the part of the mind and spirit connection that is the closest to God. There are all these different layers of the mind. They're each important for being a human being, but that part of it is the closest to like really hearing God. It's just a lot of clarity. It adds a lot of clarity, and it's a muscle, you know, like it is because of the way our brains are wired. It is more likely that we will immediately go to judging another person and then believing that judgment, judging ourselves and then believing that judgment. It's just a really, really old mechanism of keeping ourselves safe. Like that right. part of our consciousness has not evolved to our state of existence, right? Like we're not in danger all the time, hopefully. Some people are, unfortunately, but many of us are not. And mm-hmm. so, but our mind still does that. So it, you have to build a different muscle in order to have your mind go a different way. So yeah. if you immediately judge someone, but you don't hold on to it and you get curious instead, there's so much good that comes from that. You know, there's so much possibility for healing that comes from that. There's so much possibility for new experience that comes from that. When we're in less of a place of needing to be right, when we're in less of a place of holding on to our beliefs super strongly and allowing space for what other people say, kindness is more possible. So I always like talk about in physical yoga practice, you know, because I teach public yoga classes as well. I always talk about how yoga is teaching us how to be like, yes, you can do cool things with your body, but it's teaching you how to be less of an asshole. Like that's really what this practice is. Less of an asshole to yourself, less of an asshole to other people. And I think that's just like really important right now in the world. Totally. You know?
Do you feel like you are constantly in tune with your intuition since you do all this accountability work?
I wouldn't say constantly. I would say a lot of the time. For me, where it gets really muddy is when it's about my own emotional life and my own emotional connections with really close friends or family or partners or something like that. If it's about a situation that's less emotional for me, then I pretty much like, no, you know, right. And that's why with clients, I generally have really strong intuition. But I would say like, I've been doing this work really diligently now, regularly for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my ability to handle hard things and what I do with those hard things has changed completely over those 20 years, not just because I'm 20 years older, but based on these precepts. One thing that I wanted to say before about like personally, why would you do it is I suffer a lot less than most other people I know.
Right. Right.
Like even if I'm in acute suffering, it lasts less time. Or I at least have a deeper understanding and awareness or idea of why this stuff may be happening. And so I trust reality. I trust God. And so I'm not second guessing why something is happening, which is in Buddhism, what they would call the second arrow. Like shit happens. It's painful. What we make of it makes it more or less painful. Agreed. And spiritual accountability allows me to make it less painful.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. When I talk to people about this concept of higher self, I say this thing that is so in parallel to what you're saying, which is that you don't have to believe in your higher self for it to be working in your highest good at all times. Yeah. It does that on autopilot constantly. However, the faith in and the belief in higher self allows you to suffer less along the way.
100%.
Because you don't feel as isolated. You don't feel that you have to be in control of every detail. You have faith in something much bigger than your human form that is going to support you along the way. Let me ask you, like, we like to be really, what do you call them? Being tactical tools. We like to be really pragmatic.
It was three T's. I can't remember the third T. Something tangible, tactical, tactical tools.
Tangible, tactical tools. We like to be practical on the show because we want our listeners to walk away and just be able to like today,
right,
start practicing spiritual accountability. For sure. So what are some ways that people can practically build this accountability into their spiritual life or their personal growth journey?
Yeah. So there's a reason why meditation is always pushed so hard in spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And I think people just have a little bit of a misunderstanding of how they could start that process. And so it seems really overwhelming. Like I think when most people hear meditation, they think like, I'm going to have to sit for an hour and then and not think of anything. And then you sit down and within 2 seconds, you're thinking about something and, you know, so, but meditation is teaching us how to drop into the seat of the witness so that we can see what's happening rather than being only caught up and involved in what's happening. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that having some sort of meditative practice so you can start to see what you're caught up in is really important. Like what you're attached to, because where our attachments are or where we are the most caught in are probably like behaviors that are detrimental to us and to others, right? Mm-hmm. When those attachments get triggered. And so this is actually something from Shirzad Shamin, who's a coach and who I did a course with. But he talks about, you know, moving from the fight or flight, fight, flight, freeze, fawn part of the brain into like the more peaceful part of the brain, which he calls the sage mind. And it's mm-hmm. actually pretty quick that that can happen. And so what I regularly tell clients to do who don't have a meditation practice is to at least once a day, but ideally a couple times a day, only for 2 minutes, rub two fingers together and try to feel the ridges of each fingertip against the other, mm-hmm. only for 2 minutes, and just see what that does. It immediately downshifts the nervous system. Like wow. every client I've ever given this to says, like, I feel so much better. It feels so good. They notice a huge difference when they don't do it. So that starts a type of meditative practice, because meditation for us really is just concentration. It allows people to see sort of the efficacy of like, if I just pause for a second, what can that right. do for me? And what part of myself can I access? And generally people make better decisions from like, what he calls the sage part of the mind, you know, this calmer part of the mind.
I love that tool. I love it. So too. Accessible.
It's totally. So good.
That's I started so good. Doing yeah. it right while we were talking.
Yeah, I did too when she was talking.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because I did that for, I don't do it regularly anymore, but I did it for a really long time. And it became sort of a Pavlov's dog situation where anytime I would touch two fingers together, or I would just start doing it and immediately I would remember to like step back a little bit, even if I didn't stop what I was doing, even if I didn't close my eyes for 2 minutes, it just became this thing. I was like, oh, right. Okay. You know, and that's like, there are a lot of tools like that in spiritual practice, like mantra repetition or holding a mala or something like that.
So we're holding ourselves accountable. We're doing the things, we're keeping in touch with ourselves and everything. But what happens when you fall off the wagon for a little and you're not doing your practices as they should be done? How do you maintain like a sense of calm and not go to a place of shame and judgment towards yourself and allow for more forgiveness when you are not practicing in the way that you should be?
Yeah. So
Susanna's cat has a lot to say about your question.
I was like, so do I have a cat? It sounded like it was right here.
My cats really love to be quiet until I get on a client call or something like this. And then they're just like,
they want your attention.
Why aren't we being featured? I'm sure one of them will jump on my lap at some point.
Yes. Your cats are Leos like you.
They're not actually. I don't want to get so technical about it, but they're actually Libras. Okay. All right. Libras are pretty dramatic also though. Anyways. So I will just say, speaking of astrology, that like, knowing someone's astrology chart or knowing your own chart is a really good way for me to help people move past shame, because I can see like where that's being triggered, why it's being triggered, what the shame is about. Because shame feels different for everybody to a certain degree, and it rests in different places for everybody.
Interesting.
But overall, like big picture is the Bhagavad Gita, which is very often referred to as like the Hindu Bible. Aside from the Bible, it's the second most widely read text in the world. And it really is in that lineage, what we would call the text for householders, meaning people who aren't living in ashrams, people who are having kids, who are working, who are doing all these things. And it teaches us sort of how to live a spiritual life in a material world. And Krishna, who is an incarnation of one of the deities. So Krishna, you can just think of as God, comes down and is incarnated as this charioteer. And one of the things that he said is basically there is no falling off the spiritual path. Like every step that you take when you decide to get back on the path will be right there. Like all the work that you've done is cumulative. So you're not losing anything. Nice. Even if it's dormant, it's going to be woken up. It's not extinct. So I think just having some faith in that And then also in terms of, you know, God doesn't care. Like, this idea of shame is so human. Yeah. You know? Right.
Yes.
And animals that we associate shame with are generally like domesticated animals that I think only experience that because humans teach them that, you know? I know, right? It's like they're just doing what they do and then we're teaching them.
And we're like, no.
Yeah. But anyhow, I could go on and on about animals.
We wanted to do a pod on animals before, didn't we? And their intuitive abilities.
We are going to do an episode on intuitive animals and plants. So come back, Susanna.
I don't know that I should be on that episode. I would happily listen to it, but I don't think I have any. Like,
let us know what you think.
Anything to say about it. So, you know, God always loves you regardless of what you do, regardless of who you are. There is no shame. Like, karma is just reality rolling itself out. It's just what's happening. And God is that thing, you know? So that obviously, and you're that thing too.
Yelling on the truth.
Amen. Amen.
You're, you know, that takes a long time to, for many people to work into that deep of a belief, right? Like, that's a lot to be like, God is everything, even the suffering. And therefore, like, there's nothing to be ashamed about. Because also, like, the idea that God would shame you is just so old, old Bible, Old Testament. Like, that's just not the type of divinity that I believe in. And so combating the shame is a longer process, I would say, because it's so ingrained in us. And especially if you come from a religious background, it's extremely ingrained. But my big thing about stepping back on is choosing something that you can do every day, choosing something that you can maintain. So there are these principles in yoga. One of them is, and they're considered to be like pillars of practice. And in Sanskrit, one of them is abhyasa, which means consistent practice. And what's not written, but is, you know, sort of acknowledged, is that it's consistent practice over a long period of time. That's what makes the biggest difference. I notice a huge difference. I'm less inconsistent now with practice than I used to be. But even when I do, if I'm going on vacation or I'm just out of my routine or whatever, I definitely notice a difference and feel a difference, you know, in terms of my ability to be more patient, in terms of my feeling of connection and all these things. Yeah. So I would say, like, if you feel like you've fallen off the wagon, or you even want to start, or whatever the case, wherever you are, you always want to be honest with yourself. You know, like, you always want to start where you are. I can't believe this. That's hard. I'm so sorry.
It's totally
We let
fine.
Him outside.
He's part of it.
We let him outside, and now, like, he
wants to live out there.
He does want to live out there, but I'm not ready for him to go on the street. So just choosing something that you can maintain, which is why that 2 minutes is so helpful.
Yeah.
Just doing something you can do every day that you know you can do every day, that you don't really have an excuse not to do. And then also something that you find to a certain degree enjoyable. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, if you're sitting, like, Ram Dass was and is one of my greatest teachers. And I would say, like, guides for sure. But if you're sitting, he would say, like, if you're sitting in meditation being like, I fucking hate this. When is this going to be over? I don't want to be doing this. Just get up. Stop doing it. You're equating spiritual practice with, like, torture at that point, you know? And spiritual practice is really personal, and it has to feel really personal in order for it to be sustainable and maintainable.
So, Susanna, you mentioned the idea of, you know, shame being a part of, you know, one very specific religion and Western religion, which brought up this question for me, which is, you know, a lot of what you're talking about can sound like or is grounded in Buddhism and Hinduism. How can you think about spiritual accountability and this work if you are of a different religion or a different background, if you're Muslim, if you're Christian? Like, how does this relate to other forms of religious spiritual thinking? How can you stay in this headspace?
Yeah. That is a really tricky question because it really depends on how deep a person is into their religion, how much they believe in it, and how much those more strict principles, which are like bastardizations of original teachings, let's just like get that straight, how attached they are to that being the way. If someone is super attached to, like, you know, self-flagellation being your penance and your way out of doing something or out of whatever you feel you should be ashamed of, there's nothing really I can do or anybody can say to talk you out of that. That person would need to have their own experience of religiosity or spirituality in a different way to be moved off that needle, right? So for some people, it's just like, that's the path you're on. And one of the things that the text says is like, whatever you choose to do, do it fully and completely. So like, if you're going to be a hardcore Catholic, go for it. Be a fucking hardcore Catholic. But like, then don't derivate from that path unless you're willing to leave it. You know what I mean? Because the other thing that I know is that I have no idea what the truth is ultimately. Like, I have very strong feelings. I believe reincarnation is a thing, but there could be a heaven. There could be a hell. I don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? So everyone is doing what they think is right. And one of the things that spiritual practice has given me and taught me is that everyone is just trying to be happy, period. And everyone is searching for that happiness in a different way. There's this phrase, Satchitananda, which means truth, consciousness, and bliss or happiness, Ananda. Like, I was listening to, I was sitting with this Swami who was here from India, and he was saying, like, all of us are after happiness because it is a part of what the soul actually is. You know, the soul is truth, the soul is consciousness, and the soul is happiness, the soul is bliss. And so, for people who are really bought into their religion, then I wouldn't touch it. I'd just be like, you do you, you know. For people who are struggling with like growing up in religious households and having a really hard time using the word God, using the word spirituality at all, like having that be a part of this at all, I just talk about it like mental health. Like, do you want to keep suffering in this way or do you not want to keep suffering in this way? Because attachment and non-attachment doesn't have to have anything to do with spirituality. Becoming the seat of coming into the seat of the witness doesn't have to have anything to do with spirituality, you know? Trusting reality doesn't have to have anything to do with spirituality. It helps, but you can still do a lot of these things. Like, I wouldn't tell someone to do mantra repetition or talk to God all the time. You know, if they have a real hang up about that. But I would tell somebody, like, take 2 minutes, watch your thoughts. If you are watching your own thoughts, that means you are not your thoughts. So if you're not your thoughts, what are you?
Yes. Which is such an opening. And it goes back to this concept of it doesn't have to be about religion or spirituality, but it is about not suffering in this human experience 100%. So much. And, you know, I think that just to slightly push you on one point, I have a slightly different perspective. I agree with 98% of what you said. But to me, you know, when I'm coaching people who have grown up in a very strict religious environment, what I will say is, okay, that is your training. But I would like you to just ask, who came up with these concepts? Who wrote these things down? And to what end? What was the intention behind this teaching? And to just be able to tell the difference between what the teaching creates in your body, what the teaching creates in your emotions and how you feel about yourself versus what it feels to be at peace, what it feels to be in a place of self-love, what it feels to be in a place of self-acceptance, and just test the difference between the two and see, is there an opening here where, sure, I can stay committed to my religion, but can I expand my definition of some of these concepts but beyond what the original author wrote that has more to do with a felt sense for peace, clarity, truth within me?
Yeah.
Does that
No, I completely agree with that. I think I'm talking about a person who is not ready for that versus a person who is ready for that.
They're definitely not listening to this episode, that person. That I'll person. Tell you that.
Unless they're like stuck in a car with like, you know.
Right. Someone who is. That's true.
They're like crazy aunt, whatever.
Yes. You know. We like to define our audience as spiritually curious.
Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
All right. Well, listen, I like to let Bean ask the very last question of our guests. So Bean, what do you got for?
I want to know how you hold yourself spiritually accountable. What are your personal practices?
So my personal practices evolve and change. Right now, my spiritual accountability, there's always some sort of meditative practice. What that meditation is changes. Right now, it has a lot more to do with connecting to spirit and getting myself ready to read for other people, like intuitive readings, not necessarily astrology, although they're very often combined. But right. So right now, my spiritual accountability is a lot about making sure that I'm like empty enough, clear enough to be in their energetic field rather than like in my right. own bullshit. So that's a specific meditation. A big part of my own spiritual accountability, which has been the case for the last 20 years, is reading some sort of spiritual text every day. That could be like originally that was like classical yogic texts. But now I think about that as anything that reminds me of my highest, anything that like lifts me up to the highest. So my definition of that is much more broad than other people's would be in terms of like that specific part of practice. But that's a huge part of it. You know, like every morning I rest my mind on something that reminds me of my true orientation so that sets the tone for the day, you know?
Oh, wow.
Like this morning when I was making coffee, I was listening to this Om Namah Shivaya chant that is from that first guru that I had that I was telling you all about, you know? So it's like, it doesn't have to be. Some days I don't have time to sit and read for a long time. And so then I'll open a book to a page and like there's a few books from my lineage that you can open it to any page and get like a really important lesson, you know?
Oh, wow.
So that has been listening to something or reading something in the morning that lifts me to my highest or reminds me of my highest or just reminds me of reality and truth. That's like a huge part of my own practice. And then chanting. I do a lot of devotional chanting. So that's.
Nice. You guys have to check out Susanna's chanting album on Spotify. Her voice is truly sent from the heavens. She is phenomenal. So actually, Susanna, you are so full of insight, inspiration, clarity. Where can our listeners find you and engage with you more?
Thank you. So yeah, I have an album on Spotify. It's called Ringing the Bells and it's like not totally indicative of what I do when I chant live, but it still is like, I made it with a friend and really love it. But I would say the best way right now to work with me or just be in my sort of like ecosystem and is following me on Instagram or signing up for my newsletter. Because that's where I let people know about courses that I'm offering, like, or online healings that I'm doing or anything like that. So,
and where can they follow you or find those courses?
My website is susanna-friedman.com. And there should be like a pop-up to sign up for my newsletter on there. So I'm redoing my website right now. I'm also like not the best at keeping it 100% up to date. So the newsletter really is the best way to find out like exactly what's going on in real time. And then my Instagram is, I think it's _Susanna Friedman_. I think that's it.
We will link to all of these places in our show notes. So no worries. Susanna, thank you so much. You were so generous with your time and your teachings.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really, really profound conversation. And come back and talk to us again.
Okay, we really loved having you. It's been great to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. And we will have another episode for you next week. So stay tuned. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bruschka. Special thanks to our sound editors, Armand Kassam and Anushree Thekadeth. Make sure to join us next week for another episode.